This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. It was the news that shocked the internet. OnlyFans, a website synonymous with porn, was going to ban, well, porn. OnlyFans is a subscription-based website which hosts over 2 million content creators, some of whom are sex workers. Those creators have earned over $5 billion on its platform, while the site itself raked in about $390 million last year. But even in the successful business of selling sex, OnlyFans CEO says its payment providers had decided to crack down on sexual content, so they'd need to boot it from the site. But then there was another twist. After creator blowback and a wave of bad press, OnlyFans made a surprise U-turn on Wednesday, saying they would suspend the policy change. Still, content creators say they have more questions than answers, and the future of sex workers on the internet remains unclear. Our monthly series, Extremely Online, explores the internet and the unexpected ways it affects our lives. Today, we're turning the spotlight on OnlyFans, and here to help us out is Taylor Lorenz, a technology reporter covering online creators for the New York Times. Taylor, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
And Cinnamon Love, a sex worker, content creator, and founder of BIPOC Collective. That's an organization dedicated to bridging the wage gap in the sex industry. Cinnamon, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
And a heads up, this conversation will involve talking about sex and sexual content. Now, Taylor, give us a bit of background about OnlyFans as a business. How does it work?
Well, OnlyFans works kind of similar to like a subscription platform like Patreon, which people might be familiar with. Basically, it allows content creators to charge monthly subscription fees for gated access to photo or video content. Subscribers can private message different creators, and it basically allows content creators to generate monthly revenue.
Now, we mentioned OnlyFans CEO. His name is Tim Stokely. What do we know about him?
He's a British tech entrepreneur. He started OnlyFans in 2016 with his brother. He had actually started several other sort of porn-related businesses, and then in 2016 finally got a loan for his father, who's, I think, currently CFO of the company, and started OnlyFans.
Now, Taylor, Stokely says the banks were the reason for the change, but there was also an Axios report that OnlyFans was having trouble getting any investor interest. What do we know about that piece of the story?
Yeah, so it seems like OnlyFans has sought to raise more money, like any tech platform. They've been growing rapidly, but of course they want to compete with the big guys like Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. And in order to scale, they sort of felt like they needed to become more family friendly. They released a safe for work app called OFTV on August 17th that has basically all the non sort of sexual content creators, which on OnlyFans, very small sort of minority, I think. And then when they went out to investors, investors, a lot of them have these vice clauses, so they can't, they can't invest in porn or alcohol related businesses and stuff without getting buy-in from all of their LPs. They were just sort of having trouble raising money, according to Axios.
Well, OnlyFans now says it's suspending its ban on most sexual content. We reached out to OnlyFans and they provided this statement. Quote, the proposed October 1st, 2021 changes are no longer required due to banking partners' assurances that OnlyFans can support all genres of creators, end quote. Taylor, do we know any other details about that reversal or what banking assurances they received?
No, we don't. They haven't released any. And I think it's really important to sort of take these tech companies' words with caution. They could sort of reverse the ban, but still downrank all of that content, right? Or shadow ban it, or make it harder for those users on the app, So I think we just don't know sort of like how it will play out and what sort of prioritization those creators will receive and whether they'll still be sort of like the hallmark of that.
Now, I want you to explain a couple of terms you just used there. I think you said downwrangle and shadow ban. Can you explain that?
Oh, I just said downrank in the sense that like, and sort of shadow ban, shadow ban is just sort of like a shorthand for essentially not getting distribution in the feed. So there's a lot of examples on platforms like Instagram or YouTube where non-quote-unquote like family-friendly content, it just doesn't automatically always show up in search, or sometimes it can just be harder for those videos to essentially go viral because they have sort of a ceiling because they're flagged as inappropriate.
Now, Cinnamon, some users say they've been losing subscribers in anticipation of the change. Even with this reversal, how do you think this has affected users on the site, content creators?
I mean, A lot of, like, for myself personally, a lot of my subscribers, they're all asking, you know, are you going to be leaving OnlyFans? Where are you going to next? None of my subscribers have actually left the platform so far. I think that for a lot of people, they are, you know, a lot of fans, they're really, you know, they are coming to bat for the creators. They're there for the creators. So wherever the creators go, that's where they're going to follow. You know, people are very, you know, the fans are up in arms about this whole thing with OnlyFans, just like we are. I think a lot of them were not aware of just how, you know, tenuous our relationships are with these payment platforms. Like, they don't understand that, you know, it wasn't just OnlyFans deciding that they wanted to kick off creators, that this really does boil down to issues with banking and how, you know, porn is treated by these, you know, these big agencies like, you know, like the banks and the government.
Well, the crackdown also seems to suggest that it's because of underage or abusive porn found on the site. How much does OnlyFans moderated sexual content?
Well, OnlyFans released a transparency report for the month of July, along with the press release when they were initially banning content. I think that was sort of an effort to say, like, look at how we're policing our platform. But we actually have no idea how well the platform is being policed because, you know, with all of these tech companies, it's just hard. You know, we have to sort of trust them to moderate effectively. OnlyFans is not an open social platform like, say, Instagram or YouTube. You know, you have to kind of subscribe to see the majority of the content. So there could be problematic content, but we don't know. I would say the vast majority of content on there, though, is not, you know, this is not a site that it's a largely like mainstream sort of site. It's not like there's tons of, as far as we know, as far as reporting has shown, you know, there has not been, we don't know.
We're talking about the business of sex work on the internet and its future. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're discussing OnlyFans and the stability of sex work online for our series Extremely Online. A lot of people turned to the popular site during the pandemic. OnlyFans reported a 75% uptick in signups in April just at the beginning of the lockdown. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Joining us now is Trixie the Pixie from Southeast DC. She's a sex worker and OnlyFans creator who also started using the site during the pandemic. Trixie, welcome to the program.
Hey.
And I want to play this first. These are a couple of listeners who have OnlyFans accounts. They left comments before the news of the policy reversal, but already had backup plans in place.
My name is Katie, and I'm calling from somewhere in the U.S. I'm an adult content creator, and I have been using OnlyFans as my main platform since June of last year. It's completely changed my life. I am creating generational wealth, and I have changed the absolute direction of where I was headed. So this news is absolutely devastating to me and my other content creator friends. However, we're resilient, and we're going to be moving to a new platform called Fansly. We were expecting this nuke to happen, but just not so soon.
And we should say once again that OnlyFans reversed that decision to ban adult content. Trixie, you were working as a sixth grade teacher in 2020. Talk about your experience working as a teacher during the pandemic.
Oh, yes. That's, like, one of the, like, most, like, ironic things about, like, this whole, hubbub about like sex work and like its value like in society. So I started out right like doing like a really respectable job. Like I was literally a teacher. Like there's no, you know, there are very few other like career paths that are as moralized like as teaching. Like no, that is a good person, you know, like for all intents and purposes, right? But like I am also a mom. And so the pandemic, like, really changed my life in the same way that it really changed, like, the lives of everyone else. And teaching in person wasn't a thing anymore. And I was able to be the type of, I was able to be a quote-unquote present parent, right, while I was teaching in person. But that was because I was able to leave, like, my daughter, like, with family, like, you know, throughout the school day because she had yet to start school. But I had enrolled her for 2020, and so then August came, and my life just did, like, a complete 180, and I really found myself, like, on Zoom and facing one screen and trying to facilitate, like, her first time in pre-K-3 on Zoom behind me, and it was just, like, unsustainable. Mm-hmm. I was also somebody that during the pandemic experienced, like, a lot of deaths in my family, and so it was, like, really impossible, really, to, like, manage grief, teaching sixth graders virtually, and being a mom of a three-year-old. And it's just like me and a three-year-old and the technology in the house. And so I just ended up being like, I am a millennial, so like quitting a job is not the worst thing in the world to me. Mm-hmm. So I just ended up quitting because I couldn't do it anymore. It was like making me like a terrible parent, and or like I didn't feel good about who I was as a parent. So I just quit. And I had always wanted to do OnlyFans, but as a child of the internet, I know that 12 and 13 year olds have the internet. So I was like, I'm not actually going to do this. Like while I was working, I had the idea of like, you should build up your OnlyFans first before you, you know, jump ship from, like, your 9-to-5. But like I said, I know I couldn't do that because 12-year-olds have the internet. Mm-hmm. And the more popular you become. And especially when it comes to their teachers, if kids want to find you online, they will find you.
So you quit that teaching job. You joined OnlyFans. What was your experience like? What has it been like?
Well, so it's actually been this really, really exciting because OnlyFans isn't the only sex work that I do. And so OnlyFans was like a package deal for me, like with other like areas of passion that I like had. So like in addition to like doing OnlyFans, I'm also like an exotic dancer or like just a stripper, like in general. And then I also run a mutual aid network that serves like sex workers as well as moms. It's a very interesting like peanut butter and jelly sandwich type of mix mm-hmm. of a thing. So like I use OnlyFans differently, and so like it's not my primary like income, but it does help to keep me safe because I can offer content on OnlyFans that like I can't offer like in a club or like in an exotic dance like space. So because I'm, does that make sense?
Yeah. What I hear you saying is that OnlyFans provides a way for you to provide maybe additional services to customers, but in a way that is safe and yeah, that keeps you protected. I get that.
Yeah, exactly.
So now that the site has reversed its decision, do you have any lingering anxiety about staying on the site?
Yes, totally. So like I said, so I run like a mutual aid network. It's called All Mothers Mutual Aid. It's at All Mothers DC and like all the platforms or whatever. And so like when I heard this news, I'm also a part of the Sex Workers Advocacy Coalition here in DC. And so like when I heard this news, obviously as an organizer, like my first thought was, oh my God, what are people going to do? Especially because of how many people I know who are like also, so for example,
one of my homegirls at work at the club, we were literally walking out a couple weeks ago from work, you know, going to our cars, whatever. And I'm like, you know, we're talking and she's worried about COVID. She's worried about the variant. You know, she's worried about the clubs having to close back down soon. But she's like, was saying like, but I have OnlyFans. So like, I'm about to transition out of working so much in the club and transition into OnlyFans so that during, because that's also a thing for exotic dance. It's also a thing for strippers. The pandemic shuts the clubs down. We have to have other ways to maintain our clientele and continue to do sex work. And so I had started up, like, literally a few days ago, started up, like, an OnlyFans fund for, like, I was planning to campaign, like, as an organizer to, like, collect funds so that when OnlyFans does shut down or whatever, I can, like, distribute the money, like, to other sex workers who either OnlyFans was their primary or OnlyFans was their supplementary, and we're all just trying to figure out, like, how to pivot. And so now as an organizer, I feel very conflicted because I'm like, do I continue to like campaign for the funds or whatever and just make sure that I have like, you know, something in the coffers for when this inevitably does like blow up in our faces for a second or third time? Or do I like, it's very difficult now to figure out like where to focus my energy as an organizer for sure. That's my biggest, like, that's my biggest anxiety. I provide services to sex workers. And so like, I need to know how to provide services to sex workers, but sex work is so precarious. And because we live in this world now where, you know, the internet and what you do on it has consequences even for a platform as big as OnlyFans. I know that most experienced sex workers are going to diversify, but the people who started during the pandemic and then those of us who, like, it supplements for, you know, a cushion or a safety net because pandemic, mm-hmm. like, what are those people going to do? And so it's less of a... Yeah, well, if yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense. I want to know what you want people to understand about OnlyFans and sex work in your life.
I just want people to, like, understand that, like, sex work is work. And that is a very, like, common thing that you hear, especially, like, in reproductive justice movements. And in the spaces that I'm in where we're trying to, like, really destigmatize. But I think the biggest takeaway, like, for me, like, as a person was that, like, sex work made me a better parent as to where being respectable has stripped me of my humanity in such a way that I found myself with a moral dilemma in December that I didn't appreciate having to be in that space. Like, I'm educated. Like, I have a bachelor's, I have a master's. Like, you know, like, I was, like, there was a formula for my life, and I really did try to follow it. But the systems that we live under, like capitalism, patriarchy, all the isms, all the obias, you know, systems made, and then a pandemic, like something that's unexpected, and because we live like under capitalism and it doesn't support healthcare and X, Y, and Z, like all of this trickled down to like choices. It trickled down to choices, and it was unfortunate. And I know right now, especially because of like what's going on in schools with the kids getting sick, I as a teacher got to a place where it was down to other people's kids or my kid. Mm. And that was a very difficult choice to make, because as an educator, that was never the lens with which I walked into the classroom every day. But the pandemic put me in that position. And so I love sex work. I love it. I'm enjoying myself. I'm like, why didn't anybody tell me, you know, when they were like doctor, lawyer, why didn't anybody say cam girl? Like, I would have loved that. I know why, but it has given me an option. I'm now home all day with my daughter. I'm able to facilitate homeschool instead of virtual school. She has, you know, she's down. She's sleeping when I leave. And obviously I secure childcare and stuff like that. But like, mm-hmm. She's sleeping when I leave. She's sleeping when I return. But I had to tell her not to come in here, not just now, but earlier, because this is a girl who's used to her mama being home at 12 p.m. She comes home for lunch. She has no idea that, like, for most kids, you know, like, they don't see their moms for 8 hours of the day. Like, mm-hmm. This has improved who I am as a parent, and I so much so prefer that.
That's Trixie the Pixie. She's a sex worker and OnlyFans creator from Southeast D.C. Trixie, thanks for sharing your story with us.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me.
We're discussing the future of porn on the internet. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
This message comes from Capital One. With the Capital One Venture Card, you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. and you can use those miles toward travel expenses like flights, hotels, rental cars, and more. Just book and pay for your travel using your Venture card and redeem your miles toward the cost. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Credit approval required. Capital One Bank, USANA. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Now let's get back to our conversation on OnlyFans and sex workers on the internet. Let's jump in here with a message from one of you who uses OnlyFans.
My name is Angel Provocateur from New York City, and I am a NSFW content creator on OnlyFans. I think that these restrictions that were imposed by payment processors are terrifying and a very bad sign for free speech in general, because organizations like Exodus Cry have so much power over the payment processors that we use every day, so that they get to dictate how we live our lives and how we make our money. I, in general, work very hard to keep religion and religious beliefs out of my life. And this is just another example of Christian fundamentalists having way too much power in our society, enough power to cause thousands of people to lose their jobs.
We also got this tweet from Damien who says there's been some discussion that the same anti-sex work fundamentalist Christian group Exodus Cry, who have previously pressured payment processors to distance themselves from sex work of all kinds, were behind the pressure on OnlyFans. What is their role in this? And so there are, we got a couple of questions about this group. On their website, they say they are, quote, committed to abolishing sex trafficking and breaking the cycle of commercial sexual exploitation. But Exodus Cry recently led a campaign called Trafficking Hub, which petitioned to get Pornhub to shut down due to exploitative content. Pornhub removed all unverified users as a result. Cinnamon, how did sex workers respond to that campaign and eventual change at Pornhub?
The relationship that Pornhub has with sex workers is, you know, tenuous at best. For many years, piracy on the internet of, content creators, content that was either posted on their personal websites or their paid premium platforms, or even mainstream companies, content that they were producing has been reposted by fans on Pornhub and other tube sites like it. We've actually been asking Pornhub and all these other tube sites to take down pirated content for a really long time. You know, it's one of the reasons, if we think about, back to the early 2000s, about, the way that the music industry, as well as the porn industry really were impacted by Napster, Pornhub became like the Napster specifically for porn. The adult industry really did not take these tube sites seriously, and the presence of them, impacted the industry in a huge way. Sites like OnlyFans allowed content creators who were who couldn't afford to have these like their own individual website to be able to. It allowed us to be able to not have those high expenses and also be able to kind of compete in this marketplace where people want to be able to spend money, but we're trying to compete with the free content of sites like Pornhub. However, in the recent years, Pornhub has really worked hard to reframe their relationship with sex workers and content creators. They've created a model hub that allows content creators to make money off of their content. When an organization like Exodus Cry or, NCOSE comes in and implies that all of the content on OnlyFans is illegal, that all of the women and queer folks and trans folks who are on OnlyFans are being exploited, it really does more harm than good. Prior to this, right around the time that MasterCard pulled out of Pornhub, prior to that, Pornhub actually had an independent organization do an audit of all of their content and found that Pornhub actually had less incidents of illegal content than Twitter and Facebook. And so, it's so easy for these anti-porn organizations to get support around, getting rid of Pornhub and OnlyFans, because for people who are anti-porn and anti-sex work, they don't use these platforms. And so it's easy to assume that pornographers are these big elite, these big monsters who are out there harming your children. But the reality is that the majority of the content that are on these sites is legal content. It is people like myself and Trixie and other folks who are just working to survive capitalism are able to use to be able to make real money and have an impact, a positive impact on their lives.
Well, you mentioned NCOSE, that's the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. It's an American nonprofit known for its anti-pornography stance, anti-sex trafficking advocacy based on abolitionist principles. Just wanted to make sure people knew what that was. Cinnamon, Discover, MasterCard, and Visa all cut ties with Pornhub after concerns of exploitative content on the site. How do these banks and payment processors get so involved?
Taylor mentioned earlier, like, vice clauses in banking. We see this not only in VC funding and investment banking, but we also see this even at a very low level where, you know, people are constantly losing their bank accounts. You know, Chase and Citibank are notorious for closing people's bank, sex workers' bank accounts. And people find out that they're closed when they get a check in the mail from their with their balance. I also have lost, like, so many payment processors. I've lost my Venmo. I was in the first round of PayPal, accounts that were closed. I lost my Square account, even though I was using it to sell photographs and videos at conventions. I mean, they're really the vice clauses that are attached to banking that, they have a lot to do with tobacco and alcohol and gambling and pornography, as well as cannabis. And, with cannabis, it's a little different because we see that, it's a Schedule I drug. And, even though it's legal on the state level, banking is something that's ruled by the federal government. And so you can't have a bank account and have a dispensary, for example, even if it's legal in your state. But with pornography, it's a little different because we're talking about a legal industry. We're talking about people who have to pay taxes, people who are getting 1099s, and it's really kind of absurd that the federal regulations around vice clauses in banking will allow this kind of occupational discrimination.
Help me understand how that even gets triggered, though. How does a bank know what someone is paying for?
Right. So it's, when you have a direct deposit that's coming in and, there's a record of where that money is coming from. Or, like, let's say if someone's using their Venmo and you're getting the exact same dollar amount in, multiple increments from various different people, it flags what's called suspicious activity. And so they can shut your account down simply because they think that it's suspicious activity, even if they don't know what it's for. And a lot of people lose their accounts that way. The last caller mentioned how they were using their payment processors to sell photographs of themselves, which is perfectly legal. But these banks don't actually, and these payment processors, they don't do the due diligence to find out whether or not someone is using these platforms for legal reasons. They just assume, if it's suspicious, they have the right to close your account without any warning. The dangerous part about that is that when you have these companies like OnlyFans and all of these other adult processors, because of FOSTA SESTA and the way that FOSTA SESTA shifted the conversation around trafficking and expanded the definition of trafficking and also expanded the third-party companies' responsibility and the ability to charge third-party companies for incidents of trafficking. These companies now, they have the responsibility to shut down people's platforms if they suspect that they're even doing any kind of human trafficking. And when they do, they can actually hold people's money and and not give it to them.
I want to make sure people know what you're talking about when you say FOSTA, SESTA. In 2018, former President Trump signed into law the bill known as FOSTA, or the Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act, and SESTA, which is the Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act. So I just want to make that clear. But go ahead, Sinead.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I mean, you know, people have lost thousands and thousands of dollars when their accounts have been closed on these paid platforms like an OnlyFans because they were kicked off for the suspicion of trafficking, because these laws are just so overreaching and has expanded these definitions of trafficking and who can be held accountable for that. And so people, you know, this trickles down also into our banking, where banks don't want to be held liable for the possibility that someone's doing something illegal.
Taylor, I want to know what you'll be watching within the tech and creator space as you're watching the full scope of the fallout with this OnlyFans reversal and maybe some of the ongoing conversations about this intersection of sex and the internet.
Yeah, I mean, like Cinnamon said, I think this is just sort of this ongoing tension and these campaigns to kind of continue to marginalize sex workers and kick off porn from these platforms. I'm just eager to see kind of how this all evolves. OnlyFans definitely has put a lot of resources into OFTV, which is their safe for work app on iPhone and Android. And so, you know, even though they've reversed this ban, I think let's see sort of how wholeheartedly they still support, these creators that really built their platform.
That's Taylor Lorenz, technology reporter covering online creators for the New York Times. Also with us today, Cinnamon Love, sex worker and founder of BIPOC Collective. That's an organization dedicated to bridging the wage gap in the sex industry. Taylor, Cinnamon, thanks for your time today. Today's producer was Michelle Harvin. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.